Our fourth quarter underway. We are off and rolling. Will Peterson is hanging out with me today, sitting in for Stoke. Plus, you guys, always a part of the program. We're with you till 2. That is when The Drive will take over. Philip Lindsay, Zach By. They'll get you home tonight. And if you're a late starter, well, our Denver Sports crew's got you with Denver Sports tonight. We're going to have a Rams conversation in a moment. I want to catch up on the text line. But I also got to tell folks, the clock is ticking on your opportunity to win $5,000 with a winning bracket. That's what we have available for you at denversports.com/hoops. If you go sign up for our Sport Clips 5K Bracket Challenge and you win, well, you heard it, $5,000 coming your way. You have to go sign up and have your bracket completely filled out by March 21st. That's tomorrow at 10 a.m. when the first game tips off. Again, $5,000 on the line at denversports.com/hoops. Big shout out to our friends at Sport Clips for jumping on board in our 5K bracket challenge. That's what I'd do. I'd fill out my bracket. I'd go to Sports Clips, get myself a nice clean haircut, and then I'd mark my game-winning bracket to win $5,000.
Yeah, that's a lot of cash, man. And there's, you know, there's so many contests out there these days that are like, hey, you can win a trip or you can win a car or whatever. And first of all, those contests are going to be bigger because they're national contests. But second of all, there's not many contests out there, Dover, that are cold, hard cash.
Yeah, that's right.
That's what we're giving away. I'd encourage people to go sign up.
Do it right now. DenverSports.com/hoops. All right. I want to catch up on the text line on a few of these because they're cool moments that we've all had. And what means the most to you is your favorite Denver sports championship. Then we'll talk a little Rammies. This one from the 971. Their first text reads, how the hell did you leave the helicopter off the list and put anything CSU on there? Clearly the skateboarder filled this out.
I mean, I was kind of trying to make that point gently about 10 minutes ago. Gently, I mind you.
No, they're not going that route. No. And their favorite sports moment, the Broncos' first Super Bowl. They were a senior in college, had a huge dog pile after Mobley knocked down the Favre pass, and spent a ton of money on QVC that night, buying all kinds of crap that I still have today.
Oh, that's cool. Hey, got to get loaded up. I mean, first ever title, man. And yeah, they had a lot of heartbreaks in many of Super Bowls before, and they finally broke through.
Someone says the Nuggets championship last year, so awesome. I was at a Brooklyn bar, and the game was over. The bar went crazy. Everyone just stormed downtown. Oh, they were at Brooklyn's bar. And stormed downtown. Best day ever. Maybe they ran into Aaron Gordon, remember, rolling around with his shirt off.
That was great, man.
Partying with the people of Denver. An awesome, awesome moment right there. A lot of folks are giving us the, here's when I cried at the event when my team won the championship. That's what another one is here. Only twice did I cry for a sporting event, when the Cubs won the World Series and the Broncos won their first Super Bowl. So tears, that means something's gone very, very right in that aspect of it. So a lot of good stuff coming in on the text line. Keep it coming. People sharing their stories of meeting Shannon Sharp after he was a Super Bowl champion. So all kinds of fun stuff, man. Keep it going on the RamosLaw.com text line. All right, Will, let's talk a little bit about the Rams. And I actually want to talk about something that doesn't have much to do with basketball, but it was awesome. You know how they do the in-game interviews with coaches?
Sure.
So they did Bennett first, and then Nico Medved got his latter part of the first half. When Nico jumps up, and I didn't notice it at first, and actually Awful Announcing tweeted it last night, because I'm listening to Nico. I want to hear what the coach has to say about how the game's unfolding. And then I scrolling through Twitter, having some fun, and I see the tweet from Awful Announcing. The entire time that Nico was being interviewed, the Ram mascot and the Cavalier mascot had met at center court and were having a dance off.
No way, really?
You got to go back and find the tweet. It's awesome, dude. Like, I mean, it's a full on dance off. The Cavalier would do a move, the Ram would watch and just like vibe a little bit, and then he'd stop and the Ram would start dancing and the Cavalier would just kind of vibe and watch a little bit. It was awesome, man.
I mean, it's great. There is a lot of tension in these games because they're all game sevens, right? If you win, you move on. If you lose, your season's done. But there's a little bit of lighter moments too. We have to remember it is college kids dancing in costumes at half court, cracking us up. So keep some things in perspective, I guess.
Yeah, it was very, very cool to see. And then obviously the big part of it was them just taking over, controlling the basketball game with Nate Clifford and Joel Scott. Didn't get a lot out of Isaiah Stevens and still were able to win by 25 points. It was just 28% shooting on twos, 17% shooting on threes for Virginia. They shot 64% from the free throw line. They were just bad all the way around. But I love what you've been saying, Will. Instead of it being a, man, Virginia stinks,
How about how good Nico had his guys ready to go and rolled through round one?
Well, yeah, and to quote Zach Bye, two things can be true at the same time. Virginia does stink. Virginia was terrible. The committee messed up. The Cavaliers should not have been in the tournament, but that doesn't mean we take away from what CSU did. They won by 25. They proved they were severely underseeded, had no business playing in this first four play-in type deal. Again, you mentioned some of the numbers there, the percentages they held them to. Beekman, Virginia's best player, goes 4 for 16. McNeely, their second best player, goes 2 for 13. Mm-hmm. So you held the two best players 6 of 29 from the field. Not a math expert, but that's about 21%. Those guys, just the two of them, shot, Josh. So yeah, this Rams defense was smothering. That's the word I used at denversports.com. I think it's a good word last night because it felt like every time you looked up, Virginia was 20 feet from the basket and there was 2 seconds left on the shot clock.
Yeah.
That's a pretty good recipe for success. So let's give the Rams credit and let's also start to wonder, could this be the best thing that ever happened to the Rams? Because now you played on Tuesday and in 25 hours, you're tipping off in Charlotte against Texas. If Texas just thinks what everyone in the national media thinks, oh, Virginia stinks, they're terrible, it wasn't anything CSU did, it was all Virginia, they may overlook the Rammies, and 27 hours from now, we could be talking about CSU in the round of 32,
yep,
one game away from the Sweet 16.
Yes, it could be a real possibility. By the way, those numbers that we rattled off about how bad Virginia was, no D1 team has put that bad of stats up in a game in 25 years.
Wow, I hadn't seen that.
25 years they hadn't shot the ball that bad.
So again, that's a lot of Virginia sucks.
You're right.
But that's a lot of the Rams defense was that good.
And actually, let's get into that. Here's Nico Medved talking about how good that Rams defense was.
Our guys did a great job, I thought, of challenging shooters, defeating screens, helping appropriately in the lane, helping the helper. When they got into the paint, we did a great job of challenging without fouling, and we held them to one shot for the most part, and so that's a pretty good recipe.
I love that, too, the helping the helper of, hey, where the help came from, mm-hmm, somebody has to make that rotation. That gets lost in the sauce in the NBA quite a bit. So you can imagine how much it can get lost at the college level. But the Rams were not letting that happen. Wherever body flew from, that next defender rotated to where that body flew from. It honestly will. Outside of, like I said, it felt like they were stuck at 2-2 and then 4-2 for 5-6 minutes. But after that, the final 34, it was dominated by CSU on both ends of the floor.
Yeah, you're right. It was clinical. And in the Cavaliers, Virginia went 51 minutes of real time without a bucket. I mean,
crazy.
That is stunning, 51 minutes of real time. You could have gone and got a great workout in the gym, and the score, they still would have been stuck on 14 points. 14 was their unlucky number last night. It does make me a little nervous for tonight, though, because I think the Mountain West was severely underseeded. Nico Medved said himself he was shocked that Boise State was in a play-in. And the Buffs have a much tougher test this evening because they ain't getting Virginia. They're getting a Boise State team that was pretty darn good in the Mountain West, just like CSU was. And for CSU, that led to a 25-point win. I fear Tad Boyle's group is in for a test that I'm not so sure they're going to pass.
Let's talk about that a little bit because Tad was on this station yesterday. He joined Zach Bye and Philip Lindsay and talked about what turned this season around.
Let me first say, Zach, that's on you, man. I can never lose faith in the Buffs. I can tell you that.
It is. I raise my hand.
Guys, look, as I look back, and it's, you know, it's easy to say now, but that trip to LA that we made, you know, middle of the conference, actually about 2/3 of the way through the league, and we lose a really, really heartbreaking game to UCLA, and we're at Pauley Pavilion, and in that locker room, I mean, it was as dead as it could be because our guys, we fought our tails off. I mean, really competed and lost to a good UCLA team that we felt like we should have beaten. And then, you know, 2 days later, we go to SC and we're down 16 in the second half and somehow find a way to scratch and claw back and win a game in double overtime from down 16. And then to see that locker room and the joy and the happiness that we felt together and the sense of accomplishment. And then we just got on a run. You know, we didn't lose again until the other night in Vegas in the conference, you know, championship. And we reel off 8 in a row and win of 8, win 8 of 9. And that game at SC after that tough UCLA loss was definitely the key.
So they learned who they were. They learned how to respond to adversity, learned how to bounce back from a bad loss to UCLA. And then you go to USC, and we talked about it that night, or the weekend. It was a Saturday night game, if I remember right. That could be something that galvanizes this team, that makes everybody a believer in what Tad has been selling throughout the entire season. And that's exactly what it did.
Yeah, they deserve a lot of credit because they weren't on anyone's bracket or bracketology at that point in the season. And then they slowly crept up and up and up. And as we saw, they did just enough to get in from the committee. CSU, the last team in, CU, the third to last team, into the big dance. That being said, you can't let the loss to Oregon sort of derail that momentum you had. You have to flush that, and you have to focus on it's a brand new season tonight in Dayton. I'm not so much worried about the bus. I do think they've turned a corner. I'm more worried they got kind of an unfair draw, that they got a team in the first round that probably should have been a 7 or an 8 seed and not battling for a 10 seed with CU. If they lose tonight, I don't think it'll be because of what CU did. I think it'll be because Boise was underseeded.
We literally just got a text that says CU, the two letters, not CU, S-E-E-Y-O-U. Somebody thinks that they're hearing us say CU, not CU, when it's all CU.
I mean, it's CU.
Yeah.
I will see you later, or I will root for CU tonight. They're the same sentence.
Yeah, that's exactly right.
Yeah.
I see you, boy, Phil's Twitter versus I see you, boy, is the same thing.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know what you did for lunch there, 202.
But. I appreciate you texting the show. But
thanks for tuning in.
Yeah, I'm not.
Apparently you hear different than we hear.
I'm not on the same wavelength as you on this one.
I wonder if he got bit by that spider that got Peter Parker. His senses are in heightening right now. In heightening? What is the word?
Heightened.
Heightening. Yes, thank you.
No, heightened.
Heightened.
Yeah.
His senses are heightened.
There you go.
Okay. I knew I'd get there at some point. All right, well, let's take a time out. I want to hear from Coach Malone. I want to hear from Jared Bednar. The Avs and the Nuggets are two of the hottest teams in the NBA and the NHL. How do they keep it rolling? We'll find out next.
You're listening to Stokely and Josh on Denver Sports Station, 104.3 The Fan.
Nuggets get a win last night. They're 12-2 post-All-Star break. We've given Michael Porter Jr. his flowers today. He has been good post-All-Star break in the 14 games. In fact, we argued that he has maybe slid in as that third member of the Big Three where we kind of had Aaron Gordon slated for a lot of this season. How do you feel about that, Nuggets fans? And then we also touched on the Avs and the big night Miko had. Hattie for Miko, seventh of his career. It was Casey Mittelstadt with a snipe from the wrister that was the only other goal. And then Nathan MacKinnon extending his point streak to 16 games. But I want to hear a little bit from these coaches. And let's start with Michael Malone doing what we did, giving his flowers to MPJ.
I think when teams are putting two on Nikola, somebody's getting a wide open shot. I think in that Dallas game, we were 3-for-13 on wide open threes. So now it's just a matter of stepping up and knocking them down. And we know Michael Porter, post All-Star break, is shooting the ball lights out. And obviously 26 more points tonight.
See, and he mentioned the confidence in the shooting at lights out. Well, Michael's always, he's never afraid to take the shot. But he now here in a couple of these games after the All-Star break, he's shooting shots where Steph shoots threes from. And without hesitation, catch, shoot, because I have my feet are planted, my shoulders are square, and they're giving me the space. He's never had that confidence before.
Yeah, and when he gets in that zone like he did last night in Minnesota, you just feel like he's not going to miss. And that is such a good feeling as a Nuggets fan because it was 93-89. There was about 7 minutes to go in the game. Jokic had been getting beat up on the inside. It wasn't a distribution night for Jokic. Only had the two assists. And it just felt like, okay, who is going to get them out of this rut? And it was Michael Porter Jr. And yeah, you're right. Not only is he shooting with confidence, he is shooting from anywhere on the court with confidence. You compared him to Steph, and Steph still has it to some extent, but Steph really, you know, 3, 4, 5 years ago in his prime, you felt like dude could pull up from inside half court and it had a 50-50 chance of being buckets. And that's kind of where I'm at with Michael Porter Jr. right now. It's a special, special time for the Nuggets because, like you said, if we have to narrow it down to three, maybe he is in the big three.
Yeah.
You know, maybe it's obviously, of course, Jokic, Murray, and MPJ, but why can't it just be a big four? Or why can't it be a big five? Because they got the best starting five in the league. Aaron Gordon and KCP are there primarily to play defense. So it's nice to see Porter doing what he's paid to do, and that's put the ball in the hoop.
You know what else? You brought up KCP there, and this just popped into my head last night. Michael Porter Jr. got to the free throw line two different times in the crunch moments of the fourth quarter. He went 3 for 4, and he knocked down both that were in the late free throws that kind of helped seal the deal. But on that second trip to the free throw line, obviously everybody's up on the bench, but KCP is up. He's got the towel on his shoulder, and he's yelling something to Michael. Michael makes the first free throw, and KCP fist pump, like if he had made the shot. And I wonder if maybe there's, again, speculation here. I'll do a little digging and find out has KCP maybe taken Michael under his wing because maybe he noticed a little bit of what I noticed. Like, all right, it's kind of the Jamal and Joker show, and then everybody else. And maybe KCP recognized that and went, that dude means a lot to what we're going to do. That dude means a lot to us being repeat champions. Maybe I can bring him underneath my wing, teach him up a little bit, school him up a little, pump him up a little bit to get his confidence to what it is. Because, dude, he's a different person in these 14 games.
Yeah, man, you bring up an interesting point. What did Jokic say in that text message?
I know. I want to read that thing so bad.
Because just to reset it, if people don't know, KCP spilled the beans that Jokic sent the team a text post All-Star break or during the All-Star break. Something about going back-to-back. We just don't know what. And this team, since that text message has been sent, Josh, has lost two games. They lost to the Suns in overtime because Kevin Durant hit a ridiculous three to get that game to OT. And they lost to the Mavericks in a day they didn't play well, and it still took a lefty hook shot at the buzzer from Kyrie Irving to beat them. So I want to know what was in that text. But now if we're just connecting dots a little bit here, what was in that text pertaining to Michael Porter Jr., maybe not by name, but pertaining to being a united front, right? Mm. Because maybe Jokic said something along the lines of, we have a really good group, but we need to be more like a team or a family. I'm just guessing, paraphrasing. Yeah. But the noticeable shift in attitude that you and I have talked about today a bunch towards MPJ, you mentioned Jamal and then KCP, would lead me to believe that the Jokic text message had something that made these guys realize we're really good and we're really close. But we can be even better if we are on a more united front. And that includes, let's be frank, not isolating MPJ at times. And it appears they're not doing that anymore, which is great news for the Nuggets and terrible news for the rest of the league.
Yeah, because you're right. They have the best starting five by a mile. And it's, you think about that starting five, what Malone will do with limiting minutes for guys like Peyton Watson, Christian Brown, and Reggie Jackson. How do you beat the Denver Nuggets in 7 games? And then, Will, another layer of that, if they get home court advantage, how do you beat them 4 times to steal home court advantage down at Ball Arena? I know it's not, but it seems damn near impossible.
Well, yeah, and even if you win 1 at Ball, you have to be perfect on your home floor.
Yeah.
Last time I checked, the Nuggets aren't scared to play anywhere.
Nope.
And they won a road playoff game in every single series last year. They won 1 in Minnesota. They won 1 in Phoenix. They won 2 in L.A., and they won 2 in Miami.
Mm-hmm.
So they won 6 road playoff games last year. 6 of their 16 wins were on the road. It wasn't some product of, oh, all they did was take care of home court and they couldn't do squat outside of downtown Denver. So I'm with you, man. I mean, it's easy to say, it's tough to go back-to-back, and it is tough to go back-to-back. But it's easier for me to say at this point, I think they're going to go back-to-back. And maybe that's a little cocky.
Yeah.
Maybe that's a little arrogant, but that's just how I feel sitting here today on March 20th.
You know what I hope his text message said? I hope it was short and sweet.
You know that I told that I don't want to stay on parade, but I want to stay on parade.
I want it to be just that. Get the guys fired up about Joker on another fire truck in a parade.
Oh, man. You know what? He can stay on parade, for essentially, 370 days? Because you went on parade, and then you played a whole another season, and you got to go back on parade.
That's
so,
right.
Yeah, let's hope Jokic gets to stay on parade again this summer.
All right, quick timeout. That's the voice of Will Peterson. We're with you till 2 o'clock. Prime had a press conference today and was asked why he doesn't leave campus to recruit. You'll hear his answer next.
Denver Sports Station 104.3 The Fan presents Stokely and Josh.
Let's go to Boulder. It
is spring football time. Will Peterson sitting in with me, filling in for Stoke today. Zach Bye and Philip Lindsay are coming up at 2, and they'll take you home today with the drive. So spring football practices have begun, Will. It is a, 15-day window, I believe is what it is, where they have a certain amount of practices, time on the field, all that stuff they can do, and then ultimately ends with the spring game, which, by the way, still hasn't found a TV home that I'm aware of.
Like 99.9% of spring games aren't on TV.
99% don't have Prime.
I know, but I also think that year two is not going to be the same as year one.
What do you mean? Lil Wayne's going to be there.
You really think it's going to be just as lit and just as sold out and energetic as it was last year? Oh,
there's a, what's it called? The Zoolander runway. What do they do?
Like male modeling and runway?
Yeah. That's going to be there. Like Lil Wayne. All the DJs that you can come up with, like, it's going to be a party.
Okay. I'm not trying to discount it, but I think, put it this way, for the students, yeah, is it an excuse to go party on a Saturday in April? I get it. But the national media isn't going to be talking about CU's spring game like they did last year. Let's put it that way.
You're right about that.
The shine is off, and it's not the fault of anyone. It's just it wasn't the, you know what made it special last year was the newness. We just wanted to see it. We wanted to see Coach Prime. We've seen Coach Prime in black and gold. We know what he looks like coaching the Buffs. Yeah, week one, that'll be a big freaking deal. Spring game, not quite as big a deal as it was last year.
All right, well, what was a big deal? Maybe a week ago, it came out that Deion had not made a single off-campus visit. Will, he is allowed a $200,000 a year allowance for travel, for private travel, for getting himself, for getting recruits around to meet, but he took zero off-campus recruiting trips. In that same time frame, both Jim Harbaugh and Steve Sarkisian took over 120 off-campus visits. So that was a big question today. Deion, why don't you go visit kids in their houses?
Let me address something else that I think I need to address. I don't know who did it. I don't know if they're in here. If they are, you could just raise your hand like we did when we were in nursery and we said here. There's an article that came out that said I don't go on visits.
Okay.
My approach, it's totally different than many coaches' approach. Sometimes I look, I'm a businessman as well, so I try to save our university money every darn chance I get. So for me to go to, let's just say, I'm going to Florida, and I'm visiting whatever school, IMG. You don't think those coaches are going to be a little upset if I don't come by the school down the street? You don't think it's going to be pandemonium if I'm going to get naysayed if I don't go another 45 minutes? Then if I go to that one, then I go, I didn't come to that school. Now the coach is mad, so he's not going to let the kid come because he's mad because I chose to go to that school over that school. See, other coaches, they could do that, but I can't. And I've really pretty much done a personal survey. I really, truly, in all my heart, believe that parents don't want me at their house. They want to come see my house. They want to see how I live, how I get down. They want to see what I got going on, what God has done in my life.
All right, that's a lot going on right there. I really don't like this. This is the way the media world's going. The hey, identify yourself. So what are you going to do? Reprimand me? See, you know, Prime, you're going to take my credential away?
Right.
That's weak. That's real weak on the part of Deion and asking that. They have a job to do. You don't pay their bills, so don't interfere with what their job is. And then the part of, I don't know, I think it would maybe be documented if he were making that trip down the road to go to IMG, and we might see a photo on Instagram of him on the field or talking to a coach or something along those lines. So I'm having a hard time believing him.
So is the gist of his answer, I'm too famous to go make home visits?
The gist of his answer is they want to be around me more than I want to be around them.
Yeah, and if they have interest, they can come to my house
exactly
more than I should go to their house.
Yes. I didn't like that, dude.
Okay, I know you didn't. I know you didn't. I'm a little torn on it because there's part of me that loves the supreme confidence.
Sure.
And I'm freaking Coach Prime. And guess what? Nick Saban retired. So I'm the most famous dude going. I'm the most famous dude in college football right now. Not that he said that explicitly, but I think Deion Sanders is more famous than Kirby Smart. I do.
I would agree with you.
I think the average fan knows who Coach Prime is more than they know who Kirby Smart is. I think Nick Saban was one. I think Deion is now the new one by default. So I love the confidence. As someone who pulls for the Buffs and really wants to see them go over 500 this year and make a bowl game and, heck, make a run toward the 12-team playoff, that part excites me. But I will say, you went 4-8, dude. And you started hot, and you were the best thing going, and you were 3-0, and you had an epic Rocky Mountain Showdown double overtime win, And then you guys fell off the face of a cliff, and you ran your OC out of town, mm-hmm. who was actually a very good OC, and it felt like you were scoring 40 points every night with Shadur and Sean Lewis at the helm. And then you go to Pat Shurmur, who Broncos country is not a fan of, and for good reason. Pat Shurmur once said they were trying to throw in completions. We might have that.
And we were actually trying to throw in completions.
I mean, this guy, out of all the coordinators the Broncos have had, which it feels like it's been a revolving door, because it has, he is my least favorite coordinator the Broncos have had. And now Prime makes him the OC, demotes Lewis, eventually fires Lewis. Lewis goes and gets his own job. Good for him. And Prime still has this cockiness to him that it rubbed you the wrong way. It is going to rub some people the wrong way. I'm too famous to go visit kids in their homes. They can come visit me. I understand why that's going to turn a few people off.
And I'm a Prime guy. I mean, how could you not have been? I guess if you're a diehard Ram fan, you weren't fired up the way the rest of us were. But he has, and I think we had this conversation yesterday off the air. Like, he has already been successful at CU because they matter, they're relevant, and I don't know the last time I cared to listen to a CU coach's press conference. This is appointment stuff for what Prime is doing. But it just seems like I get what he's doing too. The recruiting tool is the portal for him. But it does come off that way. It comes off a little cocky. It comes off a little arrogant. It comes off as if I'm just too important to do those type of things.
Well, and you make a really good point there. I mean, who was the dude who was shoving cameramen down during the bottom era?
Oh, yeah.
Carl Durrell. We're here on 104.3 The Fan on March 20th listening to Coach Prime because people want to hear from Coach
That's
Prime.
That's right.
We wouldn't be playing Carl Durrell's spring practice audio. I promise you that. So that's the other thing that we have to keep in mind here is, yeah, we can start to nitpick Dion a little bit, but he gave us a second pro football team in this state. I covered both teams last fall. I have never in my life felt like I had two pro football teams, but my fall last year was so much fun because Saturday I was covering what felt like an NFL team, and then Sunday I was covering an actual NFL team. We can't forget what the lows of the lows were with the Carl Durrells of the world versus where we're at now and frankly, the attention the Buffaloes get more than anything else.
Yeah, what did you make of it, Buffs fans? How do you feel about him and his decision to not recruit off campus? Like I said, the other thing that really bugs me, this is just me being probably a spoiled media guy, but like just Don't try to tell media people how to do their job. And he already does this by rewarding people that show up more and you know, write the good stories on his behalf. And I don't like that either. I don't think that's fair by any means. Just because they don't worship the ground that you walk on, they don't get the time to write their stories and tell their side of things.
Yeah, I guess I don't mind the showing up thing because I think that rewards the people who are constantly covering the team.
But it's more than that.
But it's the propaganda.
Yeah.
You know, if you don't write Dion propaganda, yep. You don't say Dion propaganda, you're not in his good graces. Well, he went 4-8. So there's only so many things I can spin mm-hmm. is, you know, this guy's got the Buffs headed toward a national title. I got to see it this year. Year one was the grace period. Year two, you got to win football games or this thing is not going to be as puppies and roses as it has been.
And that's from Prime himself. He said year two is about expectations.
Yes.
He said that. So now we have to create and hold him to those expectations. There's some more to unpack from Prime, and we'll do it either next or a little bit more tomorrow because I do want to turn our attention to the Buffaloes basketball team who have a big one tonight against Boise State. Let's check in with Tad Boyle, hear a little bit about Cody Williams, the process of bringing him off the bench, and Tad will tell you what to expect tonight against the Broncos next.
It's Stokely and Josh on Denver's Sports Station, 104.3 The Fan.
Yeah, I was always a crazy one, broke into the stadium and I wrote your number.
Final segment of our Wednesday. And we appreciate you guys kicking it with us. Zach Byfield, Lindsay coming up. Got to remind you, it's coming down to it. You got to get that bracket in at denversports.com/hoops. You're going to fill out a bunch of brackets. Why not do one with us and a chance at $5,000? We're doing it at denversports.com/hoops. It's our Sport Clips 5K bracket challenge, but entries close tomorrow at 10 a.m. That's when this thing is going to officially get underway with the first game tipping off. So go today. Take advantage. DenverSports.com/hoops. A 5K bracket challenge. Thanks to our friends at Sport Clips. You're going to fill it out. So why not bring home some cash if you are the winner? Plus, you get to text us on the RamosLaw.com text line and tell us how you beat us, which is obviously outstanding. All right, Will Peterson is sitting in for Brandon Stokely today, and we're going to get you ready for this CU game tonight. They'll take on Boise State. It's a 7:10 tip, and it'll be on True TV once again. Let's hear a little bit from Tad Boyle on, this is Tad from the drive yesterday, telling Buffs fans what they can expect against Boise tonight.
Yeah, Boise State, we played them a year ago, guys. We were in the tournament in November in South Carolina, and they beat us. Now Javon Hadley did not play in that game. Tristan Da Silva played in about a third of it, I think. He came down with a migraine headache and didn't play, you know, the last half. But they are a tough-minded, well-coached team. Their coach, Leon Rice, is a good friend of mine. He's been there 14 years. He got the job in Boise just when I got the job in Boulder. And we're in for a battle because they're tough-minded kids that play hard. They play the right way. It's interesting. I think individually, if you went player by player, you know, I feel like we have more talent than they do.
Yeah.
But collectively, they play so much better as a unit, and they're better collectively than they are individually. So we have to understand that we can't look at them. We can't, you know, their record is the same as our record. And, but they're a tough minded group. They beat us on the boards. They played tougher than us a year ago when we lost to them in South Carolina. So we have to understand that, and our guys do, and we'll be ready, I promise you.
See, I like that part. Like, it's a little bit familiar. Obviously, things are going to change over a course of a year, but you kind of understand what they want to do. Now, that's a two-way street, right, Will? Because they also understand a little bit about what Tad's teams want to do. But what this team has done in the last 8-9 games, and he mentioned it, they had won 8 of 9. They lose to Oregon in the Pac-12 championship, but who they have become over, we'll call it 6 weeks, they have become this team that goes, man, they do have a guy that might be a lottery pick. They do have two other players that are probably second-round picks in the NBA and with some proper development can be a key role player on an NBA team. They've looked like that in the last 6 weeks because they didn't look anything like that the first 6 weeks.
Yeah, there's no doubt. I mean, you have to give Tad Boyle a lot of credit because that's right in the window where you can lose a team.
Yeah.
Right? And guys think, this just isn't our year. We're not making the big dance. I'm going to start playing for myself. I'm going to start making sure my NBA stock is as high as possible. And with potentially 3 NBA players on this team, that would have been easy to do. Guys to get selfish. And instead, he found a way to unite them together, reel off this long win streak that unfortunately ended against Oregon in the Pac-12 championship. But that doesn't mean that they can't go reel off another long win streak in this next tournament, which is ultimately the tournament you are remembered by. So that's all encouraging. That said, I found his answer to Zach and Phil about the Boise thing really fascinating. He said, on paper, we're a more talented team, but they're a better unit and more cohesive. Like, whoa, that's a hell of a thing for a head coach of a team to admit that my guys don't play all that well together. We have more individual talent. That's a better basketball team over there. Those are the kind of issues you want to be solving in December and in January and not when you're about to play for your lives in March Madness in about 6 hours here.
Could it be a challenge, motivating factor? He's kind of juicing up his own guys?
Maybe.
Because he probably, if he's going to bring that to Zach and Phil,
yes,
he said that to them too.
He has. And that could, you're right. It could be an ultimate motivation thing of, if you guys ever just played like a team, we could be really, really good. Like national championship level good, or at least Final Four good, or at least Sweet 16 type good. But instead, maybe too much me and not enough we on this team. That said, you don't win 8 in a row if it's all me, 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 me. So right. They clearly found some we there, but you're right. If he's bringing that up on the Denver airwaves with Zach and Phil, he's absolutely said that behind closed doors to his team.
And probably more than once.
Yes.
Probably several times, because he mentioned it, that USC game where they go and beat Bronny and company in overtime. Like I said, that's a galvanizing moment. That's a moment where Tad gets to go, look at what we did in the second half. Look at how you all played for the guy next to you and not the name on the back of your jersey. And it's not a coincidence that they then started to roll.
Absolutely. That is the ultimate sort of measuring stick in college basketball. I mean, look at last night. Look at what CSU did last night, just swarming Virginia. We talked about it earlier in the show, helping the helper on defense and finding a way to hold them to a lousy 42 points. I mean, really, Virginia did it to themselves in some ways, made themselves the laughingstock of the nation last night and this morning and to some extent this afternoon. But Colorado State also did that too. And we saw a Rocky Mountain Showdown this year that was contested and down to the wire and a great game between CSU and CU, actually a really high-scoring game. There's no reason to think if you're CU, you can't do what CSU did last night. I'm not saying they're going to win by 25 because Boise State's better than Virginia.
Yeah.
But if you play like a united team tonight, you can win this game by double digits. There is a path where I think you're with Matt tomorrow. You and Matt are talking about a 74-62 win for the Buffs tonight. Absolutely a path to that.
How about Cody Williams, a kid that looked at as a lottery pick? And honestly, Will, when Tad signed him, it was almost a, whoa. Dang, Tad got a real one, right? Like, no disrespect to the other guys, but who Cody Williams is as far as a recruit, a five-star, all the things. His brother's already an NBA player. It was a bit of a surprise, and maybe even more of a surprise when Tad decided to bring him off of the bench and use that as the role. Phil and Zach asked how they came to that decision.
Yeah, well, you know, Philip, he's had a rough year. Cody is as talented as a young man as you're gonna see. I mean, he's got a great, great future ahead of him as a pro. And he's had three different injuries this year where it just was like it's been kind of a stop and go year for him.
Yeah.
And all three of the injuries, you know, made him, caused him to lose multiple games. And just felt like the way we're playing, we had things kind of moving and he was still going to play. But I told him, I said, you know, wait, when you come back, I said, I'm going to bring you off the bench. And, you know, he's fine with it. He's such a team guy.
Yeah.
It just was one of those things that, you know, I'd thought about and staff had talked about it and he's still going to play. And his minutes, you know, I think he played 19 the other night. So he's working himself back into shape and Luke O'Brien's done a great job in his, you know, in his place and you know, our rotation's pretty narrow. We don't play a lot of guys, but the minutes that those guys off the bench come in and do give us are critical, and Cody's probably the most.
He is definitely the most. I'll double down on that one for you, Tad, because of what he can do. How much ability Cody Williams has. He can score from anywhere. His shot has really developed, especially that corner three that we've seen really work throughout the course of this season. I wonder. I think you and I have talked about this, Will. Like, Cody Williams is probably going to go to the NBA draft. He probably shouldn't and could be developed a little bit more in another year of college hoops and then maybe be like the overall number one pick and not really be a conversation about it. But I get it. You know, you got a chance to go pro, make some cash.
It's hard to turn down top 10 money.
Even I'd imagine he's not making a ton or any NIL money right now.
Right, he doesn't have Coach Prime as his coach. He's not. I see what you're saying, but he also was mocked number one as a month ago. So he's not going to tumble down the draft boards. He's still going to get top 10 money if he leaves Boulder.
Yeah. I mean, he's not. I mean, I don't know. There's not really like a number one overall consensus pick right now anyway. But that's what this tournament will do. Someone will separate themselves that's eligible to. I mean, they're all eligible, I guess, to enter the NBA draft. And then that will be the brightest star burning going into the offseason.
Yeah, but it's interesting in Tad's answer there. He cites the three different injuries to Cody Williams and then talks about Luke O'Brien playing, who local fans will be familiar with, 2020 graduate of Columbine High School, a senior now up in Boulder. And I think that tells you something about where coach's mindset is. Cody Williams has all the talent in the world.
Yeah.
He's a top 10 pick in the NBA, but he's a freshman, and he's been hurt. And I don't really trust him, but you know who I do trust is Luke O'Brien because Luke O'Brien's been in this program for 4 years and he's grown and developed under Tad and Tad's staff. And if I need a guy to give me 25 minutes, I'm going to look for Luke O'Brien and Cody Williams can give me 12 to 15 off the bench. That will be fascinating to watch tonight. And if they win as the tournament goes on, what does he do? Go with the kid who has potential to be an NBA star one day?
Good question.
Or go with the kid who he's been loyal to the program, been there forever, and frankly, Tad Boyle trusts.
Mm-hmm. That's a really good question. I also did want to give Cody some credit of, I mean, I don't know that we would know it, and Tad certainly wouldn't tell us, But, hey, I'm sure he wasn't thrilled to be, well, wait a minute, I'm a top 10 NBA pick and you want me to come off the bench? You know what I mean? Especially today, young, everybody has egos. Younger people tend to have bigger ones because I haven't quite been humbled as much yet. So I'm going to give Cody some credit on that front, not knowing how the conversation actually went or maybe Cody being upset but handling it the right way.
Yeah, and I'm with you. I'm not knocking Cody at all. I'm just telling you Tad's mindset here. And Tad's mindset is 100%. I trust Luke O'Brien right now more than I trust Cody Williams. Yeah. And he can blame it on the injuries, and I don't think the injuries are phantom. I don't think the injuries are made up. But at the same time, I think we all know what this is, that Cody Williams is counting down till June when he can go figure out what NBA team he's on, and Tad Boyle's trying to figure out how I can start playing for a spot in the round of 32 on Friday and play the University of Florida in a 10-7 game.
It is KKFN, KKFN HD1, Longmont, Denver. I want to go back to Prime for a second because there's a couple of things we have to hit on. I misunderstood this, and you explained it to me. Prime was asked about where Shador would land in the draft, and he's speaking of this year's draft.
The hypothetical that if Shador was eligible, where would Shador be taken this year with Caleb Williams and Jaden Daniels and Drake May and all the others?
Okay, here is what Prime said.
When I speak, I'm not just throwing stuff out of my head. I'm throwing stuff based on knowledge. So let's just get that straight. If Shador would have gone in the draft this year, he probably would have been the second. He wouldn't have been the first quarterback off the board. I think he had the ability, but he probably would have been the second quarterback off the board.
So he's saying that Caleb Williams, first and foremost, and then Shador is better than Jaden Daniels and Drake May.
I mean, it's Prime being Prime to some extent, right?
He says it so confidently. I'm like, he must be right.
He must be right. But it also is funny that, you know, we're talking about, hey, would you trade the farm for Jaden Daniels? Hey, would you trade 3 first-round draft picks for the opportunity to take Drake May? And yet you have Deion Sanders saying to reporters up in Boulder today, oh, Shador's the second best quarterback in this class, even though he's not in this class. That would give people pause about, hey, 3-14 would be an awful season to sit through. But if Shador's better than Jaden Daniels and better than Drake May, maybe I will sit through 3-14 for a chance to draft him.
You know what? There's another layer to that, too, of Zach and Matt actually both subscribed to the theory that Prime's leaving after his kids are gone. What if Shador's in Denver as the quarterback? And you, I mean, what is it, a 30-minute drive from Folsom to Empower?
If you have a helicopter, maybe.
Okay.
The traffic on 36 a little different, but yes, in theory, it should be about 30
minutes.
Depending
on the time of the day, right?
Yes, yes, yes.
But, you know, maybe it's a double whammy there. You get a quarterback in Shador, and Pop stays around coaching the Buffaloes up on Highway 36.
I actually lean with Matt and Zach. I think he'll be done when Shador and Shiloh are done, which I think is after this year.
Really?
Yeah, I think it's 2 years in Boulder for Deion. And I don't say this lightly or mockingly or anything. I legitimately think it would be because of the health. He has battled so much. He is struggling to walk at times,
yeah,
Josh. He is talking about whether he's going to walk or run onto the field. He's these surgeries for these blood clots. Like, Deion has earned the right to go enjoy life and not have the stress of being a head football coach. And yeah, even if it's the Denver Broncos, he has earned the right to go watch Shador Sanders as a fan on Sundays at Empower Field at Mile High and not worry about his football team. I lean towards this as Prime's last year.
Okay. That's some in the water around here, I guess. Y'all are thinking Prime's done after this season. RamosLaw.com text line's open. Zach and Phil are sliding in. You want to join us, join them, 303-713-1043. RamosLaw.com text line always open for you. And then the same rules apply over on Twitch, where you can watch the program, twitch.tv/DenverSportsCom. What up, boys?
What's up, boys?
We were talking about Prime, his presser today.
Have you guys heard this presser yet?
I've only heard one clip about why he doesn't go in-home to recruits.
Yep.
We were here early for a meeting, so I have not heard a lot of it.
So the one we were just talking about that's kind of wild is he thinks that, hypothetically, if Shador was in this class, he'd be the second QB off the board. That Caleb Williams would go one and Shador Sanders would go two. He'd go ahead of Jaden Daniels. He'd go ahead of Drake May. I told Josh, if I'm a Broncos fan, that makes me think, well, if he's better than those guys, maybe 3-14 wouldn't be all that bad, because then Shador Sanders in 2025 doesn't sound like the end of the world.
You know, I understand why we talk like this and have these conversations, but in the NFL, it's the one place where I don't think you can look more than a year ahead. I just don't think you can do that. Shador Sanders is not Joe Burrow. Shador Sanders is not, he's not Andrew Luck. He is not one of these guys that you forecast 2 years ahead of time. He's a fine player. That's getting a little carried away, in my opinion, from his dad.
But I don't know, Zach. I don't know. The young man is really, really talented, okay? And he honestly does fit someone like Sean Payton's system because he is one of those quarterbacks that will stay in the pocket. He processes things now. He doesn't get the ball out of his hands fast enough yet.
Agreed.
Right? That's one of his downfalls.
It does say sticky, like Russ a lot.
Exactly. And I don't know if that's because of the offensive linemen, if that's because of the receivers. Now, you're dealing with better offensive linemen in the NFL. You're dealing with better receivers.
Yep.
Okay? So Coach Prime going on the record and saying something like that, that's not crazy, man.
I don't think it's crazy because Mel Kiper said if he was in this class, he'd be a first rounder.
Yeah.
So all Deion's saying is he'd be higher up than.
Yeah.
Look what we've seen J.J. McCarthy rise. Yeah. You know what I mean? And Shador's a worker. Like, that's one thing. Like, Shador works at his craft. This is not a guy who's, last guy in, first guy out. So I guess you never know. But look, he's going back to school. We'll see. In terms of Deion. This being his last year, why would he release the book after just his first year of a 4-win season?
Cash rolls everything around me. Grain, get the money. Dollar bills, y'all.
Yeah, I like it.
Why? Isn't it cream?
That's what I said.
You said green.
Cash rolls everything around me.
Cream. Yes.
Get the money. Dollar
bills. Green. Check maybe the tape. But anyway.
That's why he did it, though.
Maybe you're right. But Deion, can you release that book when you're leaving coaching and after only 2 years? I think there's enough buzz and hype around Deion still where you can get away with releasing that book with a 4-8 record. But you can't get away with taking a picture up in Folsom Field with the title Elevate and Dominate if you've gone 4-8 twice.
Okay.
I think the timing of it is interesting for me because you did. You literally finished in last place in the league and you released a book that says Elevate and Dominate, how to win 21 ways on and off the field as you take a picture in the place that you finished at last. I think that's unusual.
I think that I understand what you're saying, but I think we would be the only ones to see it that way. Because outside of this market, Prime is the dude on College Game Day, the dude talking junk to other coaches, the dude that created his own sunglasses blind, that has a book, that has a documentary on Prime.
Shoes.
He's more of that. To us, he's a coach and then that. To everybody else, he's that and then a coach.
But I think you can get away with that for a year. I think this time next year, if they fall short again, the narrative around Prime, I think, will shift as a coach. Prime will always be Prime. Like he's a legend. He is a legend.
Just ask him.
but I think if they're going into a new league and everything like this, but I think if they fall short again, I think the louder voices of who is this guy as a coach.
So with that being said, are you saying that Deion will not be here the next year after that?
Deion is done. Deion is done. This is Deion's last year. He is done.
This is not going to be Deion's last year. It's not. One, because Deion is all about himself. He's getting a lot of attention. He won 4 games, and he's still one of the highlighted coaches in college football.
That's true.
Yeah, but Phil, as I just pointed out a few minutes ago, he's also having legitimate health problems that none of us are trying to downplay, and that could factor into it as well. I've made all the money in the world. My sons are in the NFL, and I want to go watch them on Sundays and not worry about coaching my own team on Saturdays.
But you're talking about Deion Sanders. Number two, he's a prideful man. And if he loses again and then dips out, everybody's going to look at him differently than if he comes back and tries to find a way to get out of that mud, come back and be the comeback man of the year kind of situation.
See, this is why he has to win.
Yeah.
Because you can't tell me you have the number two quarterback in this draft, and he is coming back to school and you not win. You're the coach. Your quarterback is the man. You're telling me he's better than 4 of the 5 first round draft picks and you can't win in the Big 12?
But then talk to Patrick Mahomes. Patrick Mahomes didn't win a lot over there in Texas Tech.
Very true.
And although he didn't win a lot, that man is the best quarterback in the NFL right now.
Yep. No, it's true. It's true. But I think there's something to be said that if you think you're the man and you're the coach and you release a book, How to Elevate and Dominate, and your son is the best quarterback in the country, if you're the man as a coach and you have the best quarterback in the country and you don't play in the SEC or Big Ten, you better win. You better win, Phillip. You better win.
Talk to Patrick Mahomes. He wasn't in the SEC.
And I know. I know. He had one. Pat Mahomes had one season over 500, and he was 7-6.
Mm. Damn.
Zach is also the book police, though. We have to notice that.
Oh, yes. Yes.
Zach hates poorly timed release books.
Yes.
This Case Keenum book. Oh my gosh! I had years and years he disliked Case Keenum releasing a book, and now he's on Prime for his book release.
Don't forget.
Gonna be posted up outside Barnes & Noble's with like a sign.
Here at the station at the time, I was the most bullish on Keenum. I was the most bullish on Keenum at the time because I was looking for a steadying force, not a, ultimate top five quarterback. And I'm like, Keenum is a steadying force. Keenum is gonna, because at that time it was like, Broncos still have a great defense. All they need is a competent quarterback. That's what I thought Case could be, and he wasn't. But I wanted to mention that because I was critical of the guy I was most high on because he dropped that book week one of the NFL season. Week one. This is your first opportunity, Case, to be a franchise quarterback. And a book is very personal. You know, he's writing about his life almost like as if his journey was over. It's like, dude, you're releasing a book the week of the most important year of your life is getting started. I don't like the dividing of the focus. Russell Wilson, what did he do? Month that the season started, he's opening up a brick and mortar store in Lone Tree Mall. I was like, what are you doing? You don't make enough money here? Like, focus on the task at hand. So I like to stay consistent across the board. Case in his book, Prime, or Russ in his store, and this book from Prime tell me how to elevate and dominate when you finish dead last in the conference.
I actually agree with you, but I'm going to push back for a second. How much work do you think those three gentlemen are actually doing for Case's book, for Prime's book, and for Russ's store to open up? Are they doing anything? Or are they
I'll rank them. I'll rank them. Case put the most time and energy. It was such a personal thing.
Yeah.
It was such a personal thing. It was like him overcoming and then a ghostwriter, I'm sure. And then it goes Russ in his store and the launch of his freaking clothing line. And then Prime last, who probably talked for like 2 hours with a guy. And they were like, put all my words together in this book.
Yeah,
how to elevate and dominate. 21 ways to win on and off the field when you finish on a 6-game losing streak and dead last in the conference. I'm sorry. That's not funny.
I guess you haven't bought the book, huh?
Oh, Zach's going to buy the book. Zach's going to buy the book.
I just think it's funny. Not a lot of coaches release book after finishing dead last. What did you guys, I'm sorry, I got to keep it real. What did you guys, before we get out of here, give me your snapshot thought about a Colorado State and what they did last night.
Absolutely loved what they did. Outside of, I felt like they were stuck 4-2 for like 4 minutes, 5 minutes of the first half, and then it was all Colorado State. I didn't know a ton about Neat Clifford, but I love that young man's game.
Hey, he was at the golf tournament we were at, dude, in the summer.
Oh, really?
Yes.
What jerks we are.
Really nice. No, you. You. Oh. I was nice to him. I had a great conversation with him.
All right, what a jerk I am.
Really nice kid. Sorry.
Now, how tall is the man?
He's like 6'6".
6'7"?
Yeah, 6'7".
See, TV doesn't do them justice.
No.
Especially in college.
But I love the fact, like, that young dude recognized, I have a mismatch on the three guys that are guarding me.
Yeah.
I'm better than all of them. And it didn't matter. This guy's on me. I can work him in the post. I'm going to back down and get it. This guy's guarding me. He leaves me alone in the corner. I'm going to stand there and knock down some shots. His recognition of how to win that specific game and his matchups, it was beautiful, man. I was so impressed with Neat Clifford.
Well, and my big takeaway, and Virginia's getting a lot of flack today, rightfully so. I mean, the national media is dunking all over him. What is the committee doing? How in the world were they in the tournament?
As they should.
Virginia stinks. I'll say that. Virginia is terrible. I'll say that. We also can't fall in the trap of taking credit away from CSU.
Correct.
In a 25-point win.
For sure.
The Rams were awesome last night. Two things can be true at the same time.
I like that. Well, Peterson.
Drop the mic.
You know what? Last night was a special night for Colorado State, and they keep their season alive. But it was a special night across the board last night, and that's where I want to start with Phil coming up next.